Hello, and welcome to the Mosaic Portland podcast. Mosaic exists to follow Jesus in authentic community for the world. We come together on Sunday as one church in two locations in Northeast Portland and North Portland. Come join us at one of our gatherings. For times, how to find us, and more information, visit our website at www.mosaicportland.org. We look forward to worshiping with you. Here's this week's talk.
Hey. I hate doing that. I hate stop, like, seriously, like, I love to talk to people, and it's like, why do you have to interrupt me, right? Sorry about that. Hey, my name's Drew. I am one of the pastors here at Mosaic. I'm excited to talk with us as a family. Wasn't it nice to have Phil back? It was good. I feel like we could just go home, honestly. And maybe you, in a few minutes, you'll feel the same way. If you're new, at the end of our gathering, we're going to have a little thing we call Coffee and Connect. It's an opportunity just to get to know a little bit more about us as a community, as a church family. We'd love to invite you through that room. It's 10 minutes. There'll be a pastor in there just to tell a little bit more about who we are, how you can get involved. We're trying to make getting connected here as easy as possible. So just kind of put that on your radar as we get going today. So this is fun for me to do. I enjoy it. Another thing that I really enjoy doing is I enjoy traveling. In fact, this morning I had a conversation with someone whose family's in Hawaii, and I'm like, when it was 34 this morning, Hawaii sounds nice. But last summer, my wife and I got the chance to travel back east to North Carolina, where my brother and sister-in-law live. And I got the chance to hang out with my brother-in-law quite a bit. He's a Marine. He's been a Marine for 18 years. He's coming up on his 20-year retirement. It was a blast to go back and hang out with him and see Camp Lejeune, where he's stationed. His job is... he oversees all of the hand weapon training for the entire Marine Corps at Camp Lejeune. So, like, if you have to shoot a pistol or a rifle, he's responsible for teaching all of the Marines that roll through Camp Lejeune. One night, he had a bunch of his buddies over, and they were talking about things that I have no concept of, like guns. I'm not comfortable with guns. I didn't grow up with them. I grew up with, like, you know, like a BB gun, and I could maybe shoot a tin can. I was sitting around a fire with these guys and great food, and we're hanging out, and I'm hearing stories of these guys' lives, and I was literally blown away by the stuff that they had faced. I was shocked at the things that they had to walk through, at the opposition that they had literally faced as Marines. Most of them had done one or multiple tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I just was in awe of the stuff that they had gone through. The next day, I wanted to dig a little bit deeper into that. And so I pulled my brother-in-law aside, and I said, tell me more of your story. And he took me up to his little man cave in their house. And he went into a closet, and he got out this giant Tupperware and set it on the coffee table and started going through all the commendations that he's received as a Marine. Showed me his Silver Star for a battle in Afghanistan. And I was like, dude, the things he's seen, I've never seen anything like it. He told stories of being haloed. Do you know what being haloed means? He was on a rooftop and machine gun fire went like that. So, like, he literally, like, had a halo of holes behind him from bullets, and talked about an RPG that hit the metal piece in between the two front windshields and blew up. The guy's seen opposition that I will never, ever, ever be able to face. And if I'm honest, like I probably would buckle in the face of the majority of the things that he's seen. If I'm honest, I probably would buckle at a lot easier things, like my daughter crying. or my son saying, will you please give me the 15th cookie? I think if we're honest about our faith, I think if we're honest about what we believe, about our life, that when it comes to things that we're convicted about, that oftentimes we buckle in the face of pressure. There's all sorts of things, not necessarily guns or explosions that face us, that stand in opposition to us, but there's all sorts of internal and external pressures that we face. Things like acceptance. We want people to like us and to include us. So we make a choice we typically might not make to be accepted. Or insecurities. Maybe we feel inadequate at work and we choose a shortcut that we typically wouldn't. Or maybe we feel like a need to keep up with the Joneses. And we go into debt to try and uphold some standard of living. Or we let our anger get the best of us. Maybe we lack conviction or we're unsure of what's true. But I think if we're honest, we could all find different ways that when we face challenge or opposition, that we actually cave. That we actually buckle under the pressure of this. And the passage that we're going to look at in 1 Peter is a passage that is challenging us to stick with our convictions, to stick with our faith. We're in the middle of this series called Aliens and Strangers, and it's this idea that we want to be, that as we continue to follow Jesus in our city, in Portland, in Vancouver, in the Portland metro area, that we actually are going to find ourselves being in places where we feel more and more left out, estranged, pushed to the margins, that we don't fit in. And what this passage does here is it challenges us to two really clear things. It challenges us to live a distinct life as a Jesus follower in the face of opposition, and it shows us how to stay distinct in the face of opposition. And then it shows us what distinct Jesus-following community looks like. It shows us what it would actually look like if we were a people that really bonded together to follow Jesus. So what I want to do is I want to look at this passage in 1 Peter. It's towards the end of your Bible. We're walking through the book of 1 Peter as we look at this idea of aliens and strangers. And we're in 1 Peter chapter 4. So if you have your Bible on your phone, or if you didn't bring a Bible and want one, there's actually some over there on the side. We're going to look at these verses in 1 Peter chapter 4, 1 through 12. Now, I just want to say this up front. There is a ton here, like a lot, like so much, that we're not going to get through absolutely everything. So this is just a little bit of how we can be a distinct people in the face of opposition. So will you hear these words from 1 Peter chapter 4? It says, therefore, since Christ suffered in his body, arm yourselves also with the same attitude, because whoever suffers in the body is done with sin. As a result, they do not live the rest of their earthly lives for human desires, but rather for the will of God. For you have spent enough time in the past doing what pagans chose to do, living in debauchery. I like to say that word. It's kind of fun. Debauchery. Lust. Drunkenness. And I bet you didn't think you were going to hear this word at church. Orgies. Carousing. And detestable idolatry. They are surprised that you don't join them in their reckless, wild living, and they heap abuse on you. But they will have to give account to him who is ready to judge the living and the dead. For this is the reason the gospel was preached even to those who are now dead, so that they might be judged according to human standards in regard to the body, but live according to God in regard to the spirit. I'm going to stop there for a second. There's a lot of stuff in that, huh? So what I want to do is I'm going to try and explain the big idea behind that chunk. And then we'll go through some of the possible questions that you might have. And then hopefully we'll see how this encourages us to stay distinct and be a distinct community. So what's happening in those first six verses is really this. Peter's contrasting two ways of life. He's contrasting the way of people that follow Jesus and a life of people that don't follow Jesus. Specifically, he's speaking to this community of people that have been literally pushed to the margins. They've been abused for what they believe. They've actually, there's historical proof that they were executed for following Jesus during this time. So the suffering that they're facing is pretty massive. And so what he's saying is, as he's contrasting these two ways of life, when he jumps in at verse 1, he says this idea that since Christ suffered in his body, arm yourselves also with the same attitude, because whoever suffers in the body is done with sin. So that's, for me, when I read that, I was like, wait, you're saying suffering causes me to not sin anymore? And that's actually not what's happening. But what's happening is suffering, it doesn't actually fix sin. But what happens when you suffer for what you believe, for your faith, and you stick with it, what motivates you actually rises to the top. It bubbles up out of you. Your motives, your deep inner motives bubble to the surface. And you see that kind of explained in verse 2, where he says, as a result, so because of their suffering, they do not live the rest of their earthly lives for evil human desires, but rather for the will of God. So you see that this idea, you're not sinless because you've suffered, but what's changed is that your motivations now are significantly different. Your motivation is God's will, not human desires. And then he describes what that life used to look like in verse 3 and 4. He says, for you've already done this. You've already spent enough time in the past doing what pagans chose to do, living in debauchery, there's that word again, lust, drunkenness, orgies, carousing, and detestable idolatry. So he's going, look at these two different ways of life. There's the way of humanity's desires, and there's the way of God's will. And Peter's trying to be really clear that Jesus' followers live for God's will, not for the will of other people around them. You've already lived this way. And now what you're experiencing, when you look at that next verse, verse 4, that they're surprised that you don't join them in their reckless and wild living. And so what do? They abuse you. So these guys are actually facing physical abuse. So Peter's saying, stay true. Be distinct, be different, obey the way of Jesus even in the face of opposition. And the result's going to be that your friends are going to beat you up. They're going to punch you in the nose. And then this is where it gets even a little bit more strange. Look at verse 5. It says, but they will have to give account to him who is ready to judge the living and the dead. Now, I don't know if you're like me, but when I read that the first time, I was like, that's kind of strange. Then I was like, oh, wait, if I was getting beat up for what I believed, that would be kind of cool that someone was going to have to pay for it. Like, they're going to have to account for this at some point. I was like, oh, good. Like, that would be good news. So this community, when they hear that, they would have actually thought, that's really good news. I'm not just getting beat up and they're not going to have to pay for it. They're actually going to have to account for their actions at some point. Because what he's saying, they will have to give account to him who is ready to judge the living and the dead. So it's really this idea that God is going to judge the actions of humanity. He's going to judge the actions of people that have abused people for following Jesus. That would feel like good news to me. Then verse 7 is just loaded with all sorts of strange, or sorry, verse 6 is loaded with all sorts of strange things. For this, the reason the gospel was preached even to those who are now dead, so that they might be judged according to human standards in regard to the body, but live according to God in regard to the spirit. There's a bazillion different ways that gets interpreted. I think the one that makes the most sense, though, is that not only were the Jesus followers being abused for their morality, for their choice to not live in debauchery and lust and drunkenness, but they were being ridiculed and abused for believing in resurrection. That at this point, what was going on was that there had been people that had died that had heard the gospel and that hadn't raised from the dead yet. And the people around them were saying, look, what you believe actually isn't true because you haven't seen it happen in this time. And so that transitions us to that next verse in verse 7, where he says, but the end is near. So this idea of judgment hasn't happened yet. So the idea of judgment, the end, resurrection hasn't happened yet. And so because of that, you need to live as a different kind of community. So I want to transition to 7 through 11. So look at 7. The end of all things is near. Therefore, be alert and of sober mind so that you may pray. Above all, love each other deeply because love covers over a multitude of sins. Offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. Each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms. If anyone speaks, they should do so as one who speaks the very words of God. If anyone serves, they should do so with the strength God provides, so that in all things God may be praised through Jesus Christ. To him be the glory and the power forever and ever. So what Peter does is he transitions from this is how you remain distinct, these two different ways of life, to this is what this distinct community looks like. And he describes this beautiful community filled up with hope and life. Another way to say this is this, what the church has always been called to, what the people of God have always been called to be, is to be an alternative reality to the world. To be a very distinct people that live with a very distinct kind of love. That love plays out with staying sober-minded. That love plays out with thinking deeply, with prayer. That love plays out with opening up your homes to be hospitable to one another. To sharing, that's sharing with one another. Celebrating with each other. Eating meals together. And then use your gifts. He says this distinct community is given really unique opportunities to actually display the love of Jesus, to share the grace that God has given each one of us. Peter's saying when you live like this, you're actually being the very presence of Jesus to the world. He's telling them to be distinct in their culture means that they actually don't live for themselves anymore, but they live for Jesus and they live for others. So there's a lot going on in these short 11 verses. You see, Peter saying this is how you be distinct individually. This is what a distinct community looks like. So how do we actually be distinct? How do we remain distinct in the face of opposition? I don't know if any of you guys have ever faced opposition for your faith. I know that if I'm honest, I really haven't. If anything, I've maybe faced indifference to my faith. And that sometimes feels like opposition. Like people just don't really care. But how do we remain distinct in our culture that actually doesn't believe or follow Jesus? So I've got two ways that I want to talk about, and then I want to paint a picture of what that community looks like. The first one is this. Go back up to verse 1. It says, therefore, since Christ suffered in his body, arm yourselves also with the same attitude. So again, this community is suffering, and what he says to them, the way to actually remain distinct is to arm yourselves with the attitude of Christ, to take on that exact same attitude. The word arm is really important for us. It's actually a military term. It's saying with great intentionality, like you would take a gun to a fight, take up the attitude of Christ. Pick it up, carry it with you. So that what as I was thinking through this, I was going, so what's the attitude of Christ? I think it can be boiled down to one really simple thing, and that's obedience. Like when you look at the life of Jesus, you see someone who was, this isn't all that he was, but he was an obedient person to his Father. And so when you put those two ideas together, the way that we can actually remain distinct is to battle hard for personal obedience to Jesus. We can actually work really hard at that. I realize that that's super challenging and that we live in a world that obedience is like, what? You want me to do what? Like, you want me to actually be obedient to something other than myself? Like, and I am not in any way standing up here saying, like, I've got this all together. But what we need to do as people that are called to live distinctly is to be obedient to Jesus and to battle for that. There's this gal that did a study on success. She did a study on how do you stay successful in the face of opposition. Her name's Angela Lee Duckworth. She was a successful businesswoman. Then she transitioned from business to education, and she taught pretty low-income first-grade students back east. And she was surprised over and over again at the students that succeeded and the students that didn't. And so that experience led her to something else, which was she started studying success. And she was able to boil down to something that she has labeled grit. What makes people successful is grit. The way that she defines grit is this. She says, grit is passion and perseverance for very long-term goals. Grit is having stamina. Grit is sticking with your future day in, day out, not just for the week, not just for the month, but for years, and working really hard to make sure that future is a reality. Grit is living life like it's a marathon, not a sprint. That's what obedience is for us. It's not something that's easy. It's not something that we can just step into. It's not something that just happens overnight. But if we actually are following Jesus, at some point we have to step in and go, I'm going to fight for obedience. I'm going to battle for it. And here's why. Our personal obedience to Jesus is what brings the distinctness of Jesus into our world. When you and I are actually able to be obedient to Jesus, it's what brings the distinctness of Jesus into our everyday life. So battle for obedience even when it's hard, even when it's countercultural, because our world needs to see Jesus really clearly. So the first way that we can remain distinct is to battle for obedience. The next one is this. Look down at verse 7. And it says, be alert and of sober mind so that you may pray. Being alert and of sober mind, another way that we could say that would be this, that we need to actually think critically about what's going on around us. There's a German theologian named Karl Barth that used to describe this idea of thinking critically in the world around them with this. He would say, what you need to do is you need to have your newspaper in one hand and your Bible in the other hand. We don't really read newspapers anymore, do we? But the idea behind that is this. You need to clearly look at what God is saying. And then you need to clearly look at what's going on around you in the world. You need to go to Huffington Post and figure out what's happening in our world. You need to understand it. You need to think about it clearly. It needs to make sense to you. But you need to measure that against what God is saying to you as well. You need to see truth clearly and see the world clearly so that you know how to pray. That's a way that we can remain distinct, is that if we're able to actually think clearly, see clearly what's going on around us. And here's why, because our ability to see clearly what is going on around us in light of God's truth and his leading, it allows us to know how our world needs to experience Jesus from us. So when we're actually able to see the world clearly on one hand and see God's truth on the other, it gives us really clear ideas on how we can actually step into being the presence of Jesus in our world. There's a million different ways that we can do that. We have an artist here at Mosaic that actually took a stab at it and put some ideas on how to do this up in the lobby. I don't know if you've seen the artwork, but the artwork in the lobby was put together by a college student that attends here at Mosaic. He's been attending here for like the last 6 months. I invite you as you leave today to walk through the lobby and check out the gift that he's given us as a community, as he's challenged us with really practical ideas and images that really do that. They paint a picture of what the world looks like and a truth of what Jesus is calling us to, and they actually invite us to step into it really practically. So without going through each one of them, I challenge you guys just to take a walk through the lobby on your way out. See what this brilliant college student put together for us as a way to challenge us to think critically about how we can engage in the world. And here's the last thing. This passage shows us what a distinctly Jesus-following community looks like, and I think it's actually really attractive. It's actually really beautiful. If you just were to sit down and write like a pros and cons list of the kind of community that you want to be a part of, I think the cons list might look like this: debauchery, lust, drunkenness, orgies, carousing, detestable idolatry, reckless, wild living, and abuse. Those are the words that describe the community that doesn't follow Jesus in this passage. But then listen to the words that do follow Jesus: alert, sober mind, prayerful, loving, hospitable, serving, and faithful. If you had to just take a step back and put your thinking cap on and go, which community would you want to be a part of? Which one would you want to step into? Which one do you think is actually going to make a difference in the world? Like, is it the one that cares more about carousing and wild living and abuse? Or is it the one that actually goes, I want to open my home. I want to share my life. I want to serve others. So like, just on a really practical level, like, it just makes so much more sense when you go, there's two ways to live. There's this way that just ends in a mess, and there's a way that's actually really beautiful. And I think that if we were to live on that beautiful side, if we were able to trust the gifts that Jesus has given us and step into those and bring them to the table as individuals and as a community, that we would actually see people choosing that way of life. We'd actually see people saying, I see why you suffer, because you actually believe something really meaningful. I see why you live with this distinct kind of love, because you've experienced a love that is worth facing opposition for. It's worth battling for. So that's where I want to leave us. That we're invited to live a really distinct love as a people. We're invited to be a distinct community as we follow Jesus, because he loved us distinctly. That's why we come to this table every single Sunday. We come to this table to remind ourselves of a really distinct kind of love, a love that actually suffered more than we could ever imagine, that suffered in a way to the point of death. So I invite you to come to this table and to remind yourself of the suffering of Jesus. And I invite you to ask, how can I be obedient to you, Jesus? How can I step into living a distinct life? How can we be a distinct community? Will you pray with me? Jesus, to you be the glory and the power forever and ever. May your attitude, may your life, may it shape us in a way that actually frees us to know that whatever experience we've had in life, wherever we're coming from, whatever way we may feel like we've walked away from you, that we can actually find life in you. And Jesus, I also ask that you would empower us to confess whatever may be keeping us from stepping into obedience. May we know your love. May it drive us to live that love out in our world. In your name, amen.